Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by Microsoft Teams. When there are more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team.
Welcome to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. Time for the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast.
Yeah! What's up now? It is time for the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. And guys, listen, I have a great show for you today. First, we'll start with big deal, no big deal, some great topics. You got Cam Newton being sat down and Antonio Brown finally getting a chance to stand back up. Boy, we will talk about that. And the Dodgers win the World Series. Well, you know, we have to discuss the Dodgers winning the World Series. And folks, I can't wait for you to hear this interview that I have with my old fullback, Darryl Johnston. I went in and I got Darryl Johnston because he was doing the Cowboys game last Sunday. And as I sat there watching the game, I said, I want to not break this game down, because you break down and analyze that is alive. I said, I need to have Moose Johnston on so we can do an autopsy. Now, you do an autopsy on that is dead. And folks, the Dallas Cowboys, they are dead. We shall do that autopsy, and you shall not want to miss that. We'll tell you what's going wrong on the inside that makes it look so bad on the outside. And we will finish this thing up with that playmaker of the week. The person that made the plays, even when no one thought they would.
No big deal.
Let's start right into this. Big deal, no big deal. And we start with Cam Newton getting benched. Cam Newton getting benched. And the New England Patriots losing another game. Right now, everybody's sitting and looking at the New England Patriots and saying, oh my God, can you believe this? Is this a big deal with Cam Newton being benched? Absolutely, this is a big deal. First of all, let's look at what Cam was doing on the football field. Last week, he went 9 for 15 with 98 yards, 3 interceptions, 0 touchdowns. That's a 39.7 passer rating. That says, son, you need to sit down and get your head together. They lost by 27 points, biggest home loss in the Bill Belichick era. And I'm going to tell you why I say this is a big deal and why this kind of worries me. There are two things here. Over the last two games, Cam really hasn't looked good since the COVID situation. He's 0-2, only an average 127 yards in those two games. But let's look at how Cam's year has gone. Week one, each week he's played. Week one, he had 100.7 passer rating. It went down week 2 to 94. Went down week 3 to 73. Went down week 4 to 51.6. And down even more in week 5 to 39.7. Man, that's trending the wrong way and trending badly the wrong way. This is a big deal because we haven't seen the New England Patriots look like this in a long time. And I remember the day. I'll never forget it. I was sitting in a room right over at the complex where we practice, and Deion Sanders came in and he said, Michael, you got to go address this right now on the football team. And I knew that Deion was right. I needed to address it. But I looked at Deion and said, I understand, but I need you to understand this. It's over. And I meant the dynasty is over. We used to go into games thinking how many points we will win by, and now we're going into games wondering if we can win those games. I'm just saying, I wonder if they're thinking this in New England right now. Like I told Deion Sanders, it's over. I wonder if they're saying in New England, it's over. That's why this is a big deal. Let's go, man. Cowboys. The Cowboys, they sell off Everson Griffin. Big deal, no big deal. Absolutely no big deal. Everson Griffin had one sack. He has 77 career sacks, so he knows how to get to the quarterback. but he has come here and he's been infected with that same disease that all the Cowboys players have been infected with, and that's I'd have forgotten how to play football altogether. No big deal. You didn't want to be here, Everson Griffin, because of all of the losing. They send you over to Detroit where there is a lot of losing. So trust me, it's no big deal. C'est la vie. Goodbye. Now, along that same line, Carlos Dunlap going from Cincinnati to Seattle. Carlos Dunlap, another man that only had one sack this year, but 82 and a half over his career. This might be a little bit of a big deal here because Seattle's already one of the better teams in the National Football League. And where are they weak? At getting to the quarterback. People are talking about they're weak in the secondary. They are weak in the secondary. But you can fix the secondary with what's up front. The secondary is the back end, but up front is the front end. If you can get to the quarterback, he doesn't have time to take advantage of your weakness in the secondary. Carlos Dunlap can help those Seahawks because he knows how to get to the quarterback. Let's keep an eye on this. That's a big move in that big-time, tough NFC West. Hey, man, Antonio Brown goes to the Bucs. We talked about this last week when we talked about him coming in the league and we wondered where he would be going. And Tampa Bay, if you remember earlier, said no way he will not be a part of the organization because Bruce Arians had some runnings with him, I guess, over in Pittsburgh. Bruce, this thing's bigger than you. This thing's about Tom Brady. This thing's about Tom Brady, buddy. Antonio Brown signs with the Bucs. That is a big deal. This thing's about Tom Brady beating Bill Belichick. That's what this is about, Bruce. I thought you should have known that by now. This is a huge deal. This is why I say this is a huge deal. I know we've talked all year about Mike Evans, Godwin, and Scotty Miller, and all the great talent that they have at the wide receiver position. But we also have talked all year about one of those guys being injured. They've been injured every game this year. And bringing in Antonio Brown is a great Lords of London policy. It gives you some insurance. And watch this, because I'm a receiver in this meritocracy of a world that we are in. Now that Antonio Brown is with the Bucs, trust me, they will be injured a whole lot less because they are afraid of seeing somebody else catch passes from Tom Brady. I was too. I don't know what y'all say. I had a motto. When Troy throw, I go. And when Troy throw, you can't go. Because I was afraid that if they found out you can catch his passes as well as me, why they gonna pay me all that money when they paying you a lot less? So I couldn't put you on the field. You understand that? And watch, those guys all of a sudden will miraculously heal up and be well for the rest of this year. I guarantee you that will happen. Make no mistakes about it. Dog, listen, I talked about this and I even tweeted about this. The Dodgers win the World Series. I tweeted, like, you know, I don't watch baseball all year round. But anytime someone has an opportunity to become a champion, that perks my interest. So I tune in, and this World Series, I even tweeted, this was a great game. Just you talk about what the things that happen in the midst of a game when the intensity is on the line and the opportunity right there for you to snatch your piece of history and then somebody snatch it away from you. Oh, my God, the rides up and down. That game four was insane. It was probably the best baseball game I'd ever seen, you know, because the Dodgers had it right there and let it go right at the end. What a great big deal this is. First of all champions in 2020 is going to be a big deal because when you talk about sports, it's all about overcoming. That's what we work on every day in practice, overcoming the obstacles, overcoming the struggles, trying to perfect things. And usually when we have a season like we had this year, everybody said, well, you got to put an asterisk about it because you didn't go through the normal protocols of a season. And I say this season, yeah, you put an asterisk, but the asterisk doesn't demean the championship. It raises it up in this manner because you've overcome more in 2020 than you ever had to overcome ever in any other years of winning a championship. And by the way, the last time they won a championship was in 88. You know, the Dodgers and the Lakers both won in 88. They went back to back. So, you know, I had to make it a big deal. It had the number 88 in it, and that's for sure. But this I also say, the Dodgers, the Lakers, can a football team pull that thing out in L.A.? Can the Rams do something, too, at this time, and they have a triple header? Whew. That's another question. We're just going to leave it at the Dodgers right now. Big deal that they won that championship. You guys hear this noise? This tickles me. Trevor Lawrence announces he may return to Clemson. Big deal or no big deal? Let's stop playing, people. Let's stop playing. This is no big deal. This is just spit in the wind, words flowing out in the ether. Trust me, he's not going back to Clemson. He's just trying to tell the Jets, I don't want to come to you. I don't want to come to you. That's what I'm saying. And if you go out the first pick, I may go back to Clemson unless you talk to me and promise me you're going to trade that first pick so I can come out. In the old days, when you got $60, $70 million guaranteed as a signing bonus when you came out, then you say to the young man, you can come out this year or come out next year. Now that rookies' contracts are fixed, they're fixed. Now the quicker you come, you can't get that money that the Sam Bradfords got. You know, and you're going to have a set contract according to what the guy got last year, first pick got last year. You're going to get 10% more than him, and that's it. And the best thing for you is to get started on that rookie contract right away so you can get it out the way and then start working on that real money like Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes are getting right now. No big deal, Trevor Lawrence. You know you're not going back to Clemson. Stop playing with people's feelings. Just stop playing with it. And come on now, stop playing. You know you're coming. I'll see you in New York next year, buddy. You're going to be in New York. That's just the reality of it. You shouldn't be so good. Guys, I want to finish with this here. Big deal, no big deal. Did you see my guy? Because I'm a big UFC fan. Huge UFC fan. Khabib, let me get this right. Okay, y'all know who I'm talking about. I can't get his name. Let's stop playing. Hey, I got a picture. I'm going to post my picture with Khabib, too, because I got a picture of the champ. But he wins the fight against Justin Gaethje. Justin Gaethje, who I love, too, because he has a lot of heart, man, and he fights and swings with everything. But what I found fascinating, and this is a huge deal, I found this fascinating. I was here listening to somebody talk about they were talking with Khabib, and Khabib was saying that at the time he was getting ready to put that lock around Justin Gaethje's neck, he thought, I can do an arm bar. I can arm bar him, but in the moment, it was Daniel Cormier talking about this. He said, if I arm bar him, I know Gaethje is so tough, he won't tap, and I will have to break his arm. And he said, I thought to myself, I don't want to break his arm because I know his parents are here. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He said, I didn't want to break his arm because I knew his parents are watching. So I put a lock around his neck and I just choked him out. And that right after the match, he just started crying. And he was crying on the match, guys. And he was talking to him. When he stopped crying, he took off his gloves and he started sharing why he was crying. And this was the first fight that he had without his father, who he lost in October. And he had promised his mom, because his mom said, I don't want you fighting without your dad. And he said, Mom, I'll take care of this one bit of business, and I will retire and walk away. And I was so hurt because I felt, wow, we're being robbed of this greatness. 28-0. Everyone you placed in front of him and his dad together, knocked them down. And now his father was gone. And the fight that raged so inside of him that helped him fight and conquer everybody else died with his father. Talking about a true father-son bond. And I'm a guy that's always speaking about the power of fatherhood and the issues that we have with fatherlessness in this country. I thought it was a beautiful example of how important a father is. And he cried, man. And I just hate to see him go. So he vacates a belt that probably Justin Gaethje, Dustin Poirier, or here's that name, Conor McGregor, will fight for next. And it's probably Justin and Dustin because they know they can't control Conor. So why would they want Conor to have another belt when Conor is deciding when he wants to fight or when he wants to box? And all of it comes down to that dollar bill. I'm just saying, I know Khabib is a man of his word, and he cried, and I felt the sincerity of it. But if Dustin and Justin Gaethje fight, and one of them win the fight and win the belt, and then Conor McGregor comes back in, and they get a mega fight with Conor, and Conor wins the belt, Dana, hear me out. Find a way to offer this man a boatload of money to come on back out of retirement one time to fight one more time for that belt. I don't know how much it's going to cost you, Dana. Maybe you got to give him $20 million and then give him an extra $10 million just to give to mommy to make her okay with getting back in the octagon. I'm just saying, that was a big deal watching one of the greatest walk away. Hurt me to my soul. Now let me get to my guy, the guy that did the Dallas Cowboys football game last week. He was all pro fullback, and he's one of the best broadcasters right now doing games. That's my man, the fullback, Darryl Johnston. We will do the Dallas Cowboys autopsy next. Now, there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. With Together Mode, you can bring everyone together in one space in the same virtual room. You can bring the power of true collaboration to your projects with whiteboard, drawing, sharing and building ideas in real time, all on the same page. And with large gallery view, you can see more of your team all at once with up to 49 people on screen all at the same time. You can even raise your hand virtually so everyone can be seen and heard. When there are more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. Welcome back to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. I am what we call the MVP of the MIP. But I really have an MVP for you today. I mean, one of the best people you would ever want to meet, but also one of the greatest football players that I had an opportunity to play with. This man has turned from one career into the other, and he's done great in both of them. Played fullback on those three Super Bowl championship teams that I played on. Let me introduce to you my great friend and a great broadcaster for Fox, Darryl Johnston. Now, Darryl, I'm bringing you on, DJ, for this reason. I told people, I said, you know, as I'm thinking through, you know, okay, who do I talk with this week? And I had somebody else playing, but then I'm watching the game Sunday. I'm watching the game, and you were doing the game, the Cowboys and the Redskins. And I was like, wow. And you did a great job doing the game. And I thought to myself, well, as I'm watching this game, no, I got to push that one back. I have to call DJ. Not so we can break down the Cowboys, because you got firsthand knowledge after watching that game. This is an autopsy on the Cowboys. You break down that is alive. You autopsy that is dead. Now let's do this autopsy, DJ. First, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing awesome. Great to catch up with you. It's been a long time.
Yeah, DJ, because we're both so busy. Think about this, DJ. Yeah. Think about this. How long have you been in the business, in the broadcasting business now?
Yeah, this is 21 years total, so 20 years with Fox. And earlier this year, I did my 350th game. So I think I'm number 7 all time as an analyst in games done.
DJ, I say it almost every week because I want people to understand the journey is what we try to glean from when we see someone that does something great. The journey, hear his story, hear the story, then get that journey and say, man, I could do something great too. You went from the fullback position, to what you just talked about right there, 21 years in broadcasting, 350 games. I mean, I don't know anybody that has made that journey and done it as well as you. Do you know anybody that's even made the journey?
Yeah, there's not many of us doing TV. There's a couple doing radio. Lorenzo Neal is doing radio out in the Bay Area. Ron Wolfley works for the Arizona Cardinal organization, who he played for. But it's funny because my first year out, when I went to CBS, I had actually done NFL Europe, which Fox was running at that time. You know, they would send guys over, and it was kind of an audition really to see for us if it's something we really wanted to do. So I went over, I did three games with Brad Sham, like all Cowboys did. And I came back, I didn't hear anything from Fox. So I ended up getting hired by CBS that year, worked on the seventh team. My first week, there was an opportunity for me to get promoted, got moved up to the number three spot. That year, high definition TV came out. So I got to do Thanksgiving, the AFC Championship game. And I actually did the Super Bowl between the Ravens and the Giants down in Tampa on a secondary broadcast. And when we were there in Tampa for Super Bowl, I saw Ed Gorin from Fox. And yeah, I said,
good man. Man. Love Ed, man. Yeah.
So I said, Ed, I said, you gotta let me know. I said, what didn't you like? He goes, it wasn't that. He goes, I'm going to take that one. He goes, running backs make horrible analysts, you know, because it's just instinct, right? They play the game. It's all instincts. They don't have any knowledge about the game. So he went into this whole thing about why he didn't offer me a contract after that. And he said, you know, but don't worry about it. We're bringing you back next year. CBS doesn't have an option on your contract. So you and Troy are going to be working together next year with the number two team. And I said, Ed, I said, you know where you made your mistake? I said, I'm not a running back. I'm a fullback. And I said, for me to stay on the field, I've got to know the slot, outside, tight end, you know, the F, the H.
Offensive line, block.
Everything on the defensive side. So for me to even be able to stay on the field, I had to do a ton of study. So, you know, in the future, if you got a shot at a fullback, just understand that they probably know more than most of the guys on the offense about what's going on.
DJ, not only were you paving your way, you're paving the way for the guys that come after you, DJ, and you've done just an incredible job, man. I'm so proud of you. You know what I mean? I know a lot of us from those Super Bowl teams are still in the business and doing TV, but I think that speaks to why we were so successful. You know, to be able to now to reinvent ourselves and continue to move forward and have some honor to our success, I think it says a great deal, buddy. So I just want to tell you how proud I am of you. But I needed you for this autopsy. I want to jump right into this. Now, let's start talking. Let's talk about this. First of all, Jerry Jones came out today and everybody's talking about it because Jerry says he goes in the locker room. He doesn't see any leadership issues. I'm sure you heard that. What are your thoughts about that? Do you think that the Cowboys have any leadership issues?
I don't know if they have leadership issues. I just don't know if they have any leadership. So that, you know, to me, that would be, you know, the biggest issue. We got into it a little bit during the game. You know, I think Dak Prescott, you know, obviously at the quarterback position, it comes with that territory. But I think he's just such a unique personality. You know, he's going to be able to cross over from the offense to defense, walk into any positional room and have the respect of all the players. And then the fact that, you know, we're in COVID right now, so he's not there on game day. He's sitting up in the bleachers or he's somewhere else. He can't be down on the sideline, you know, helping out Andy, you know, talking to everybody, using the emotion that drives him as a player to get that team going. You know, I tell everybody all the time, when you weren't in the lineup, we weren't the same team because you were the emotional heart and soul of our team. And when you lose that, it's a huge void. So for them to lose that with Dak, it's going to be challenging. But beyond that, you know, our teams had leadership, you know, in basically every facet. Did you want to lead by example, right? Guys, rah-rah guys.
That's why it's so hard, DJ, to say, how could you not have, when you said it, okay, Dak is gone, 50 more dudes on that field.
Yeah.
50 more dudes. And you were right, what you're talking about. We had, it was almost like a great corporation or organization. You had leadership in every department. You had, mm-hmm. We had guys we can go to on that offensive line and talk to and say, hey, man, let's go. I don't have to talk to the whole offensive line. I can say something to Big E or say, hey, let's get your group going. You know what I mean? And everybody could get that group going. How could they not have leadership? How could you not have that if you got 50 other guys on the field? And I know Dak is not there.
I think the big thing is it can't be something that's not part of who you are, right? I mean, your leadership style, your emotion was always a part of who you are. It's still a part of who you are today. You know, I see the passion for the game of football every time I see you on television. You know, it's got to be real. And I think they've got a lot of guys where they might be lead by example guys, which is fantastic. You have to have those guys in the weight room, on the practice field, on game day. But do you have too many of those? You know, the silent guy. You know, he's a glue guy. He's going to hold things together, kind of what you said. I'm going to go behind the scenes and make sure everything's okay. People don't really know how important he is, but he's critical to the team. But, boy, you need some of those vocal guys. You need the accountable guys. And I tell people all the time, our huddle was nonsense, you know, during a TV timeout. It was one of the funniest things I've ever been a part of. And then as soon as Troy stepped back into the huddle, you could hear a pin drop. But I mean, you know, 2 seconds earlier, you were yelling at Nate and Nate was, you know, yelling at Emmett and everybody's going crazy. And then as soon as Troy walked in, silence, because he was the alpha male. We all played our role, but Troy was the ultimate leader. When Troy was out of the lineup, we could kind of bridge that a little bit because we did have such strong leadership throughout the offensive team. And really the team in general. And I think that that's going to be the biggest challenge for Dallas down the stretch is I don't know if they have that. And I don't know when the last time they did have it is, Mike. That's the other thing. I think this has been an issue for them for a long time. Going all the way back to Tony Romo and DeMarcus Ware and Jason Witten, those are all great football players. But how were their leadership styles? You know, there was, you know, I was not in the locker room with them, but just watching them from afar and getting to know them as guys. I know Jason Witten is a lead by example guy, one of the best you could ever have. You know, DeMarcus Ware was a quiet guy, you know, kind of the old E.F. Hutton, right? He didn't say a whole lot, but when he said something, you better be listening to him. And I just think it's something that Dallas has missed, you know, over the last decade or so. They just haven't had that consistent group of good leadership on different tiers. Like you said, like an organization, you could go into any department and be able to talk to one or two people and figure out exactly what was going on in that entire area.
Right. And you know, it's so funny when you mention it because, you know, you're right. And I never really thought about it as much until you mentioned it because I remember the times when if Troy didn't play, oh, my God. I mean, I spent the whole game looking at the locker room like he's going to come out of that locker room. I know he's not. He's not going to play. I had to tell myself, stop. Stop! Don't look it up. Don't look over there anymore. He's not coming out of the locker room. And you know, you remember the time, man. I remember getting into it with a defensive end. I'm yelling at him. We're going back and forth, and I come in and I'm out there yelling. And Tua is like, Michael, you stop talking to him. You're not going to block him. Get your ass in this huddle, right? And I'm steady yelling, and Troy walks up, Michael. And I'm like, let's go. You know what I mean? It's time to hear this play and move on. He said, come on now, let's get focused. And he brought us back to center. Took my mind off that. Let's go. Let's get focused on this next play. And it is a void when you're missing that. And I don't know, man, I just don't know how do you turn that around when you're missing that. When you look at these Cowboys right now, do you think this is a talent issue?
I don't think it's a talent issue. I mean, especially, you know, the offensive side of the ball. I think what happened is you're transitioning from the Rod Marinelli single gap upfield penetrating style defensive front to a Mike Nolan, you know, two gap at times, read and react. You know, how are the defensive line and the linebackers in sync with run fits? There's a lot of stuff that they're trying to learn. But the time for the COVID excuse is over with. You know, everybody has gone through that. You know, the first month of the season, I'll give you that. But yeah, come on, we're on week 7. You know, you've had 4 games to get it all sorted out and now start playing football. So they still haven't been able to figure it out. When I watch them play, I think you went after guys in the front that fit your style, what you had done in the past, but you went after older guys. I know I wasn't the same football player in 97, 98 than I was in 92, 93. It doesn't work that way. Your skill set declines as you move down the road, unless you're Tom Brady and Drew Brees. You know, everybody else is human. You're just not as dominant a player as you are at the end of your career that you were in the beginning. And when you talk about a Gerald McCoy and a Don Terry Poe and an Everson Griffin, those names sound great. They'll get you excited. But where are they at this stage of their career in this defense? Can they carry that defense? Your edge rushers are great stories. Alden Smith, you know, hadn't played since 2015 and had a great start to the season. You know, hopefully Randy Gregory is able to stay on track. But that's who you've kind of hung your hat on right now. DeMarcus Lawrence is struggling in the transition from being a 4-3 defensive end to an outside linebacker type guy. Put your hand down, stand in a 2-point stance. So there's some fits that they're trying to work through. But I think the big thing is the players that they went after to fill those critical spots up front were good players in their prime, but they're past that prime right now. And they're just not as productive as you'd hope they would be.
And that's a lot of tread on your tires. You know, it just position talking. You know, it's one thing you mentioned quarterbacks that have a lot of good years left. That's because they don't take a whole lot of pain. We've orchestrated the business that way. But when you start talking about the Everson Griffins, the Dontari Poe, all of these guys, that's like your position, that's almost a car wreck every play.
Yeah.
That's a car wreck every play. How can that not take it out of you when you're at those positions, as opposed to the quarterback position? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I always told everybody is like, well, how do you know when it's time to retire from the game? I said, well, you know, sometimes the game retires you due to injury. But I always told people it was going to be two things. I was going to get ready for a game on a Sunday, and I still wasn't right physically from the week before. My body was not healing in time for me to be on the field, or I was going to wake up on a Wednesday morning and just not want to go into the facility for practice. So it was either going to be a mental thing or a physical thing. And we all get there. It's draining. I mean, it's a grind. And I never wanted to be that guy that, you know, our generation, you know, back when I played the game. But I just think the way we practiced in Austin, you know, as physical as we were, you know, that was a grind. You know, we were ready for the games. And I just don't know. And it's not just this team. I think in the entire NFL, you know, to me, the month of September is kind of a little challenging to watch. It's still not dialed in. It's not honed in. And I think we hit the ground running every year, week one, because we were ready to go. We had worked so hard through training camp in the offseason.
A couple of things that DJ, because which was it that made you retire? You just said it was going to be the Sunday. I'm not ready. Or the Wednesday, I don't want to go in. Which was it that made you say, that's it?
It was going to be the Sunday, and I wasn't ready physically. You know, with my neck, it was made for me. And that's when the game retires you. But that's leading up to that season, it was about a 6-day cycle for me to start feeling normal again.
Saturday, you were coming back around.
Yeah. Friday, you know, Friday practices, you're finally starting to kind of shake off that kind of aches and pains. And then Saturday, you hoped you could heal up enough to be ready to go Sunday and start that whole 6-day process again.
Now, there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room. Collaborate live, drawing, sharing, and building ideas with everyone on the same page. And make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. And some of the, you mentioned how it was, and I always said that too. And when I get in the business, I'm going to be saying, well, we were this, we were that. And when I'm back in my day, because I used to hate when guys did it to us.
Exactly. You couldn't play in the 70s.
They couldn't play it in the 70s. They hate when people say, so what do you mean? You know, I'm like, back in the day, offensive linemen were 225 pounds. You got 350-pound guys running 4.5 now. What do you mean? Those guys could play. And it's the same thing now. Even when I played, you know, you had the big guy and the fast guy. Now Julio Jones is the big guy and the fast guy. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not saying they're better athletically, because that's just the nature of the business. People get better, and we keep getting better athletically. Look at the linemen. I joke, like Nate Newton, Nate and Derek Kennard, you know, we love them. But those guys were big guys, jolly guys. I mean, they walked in the door 2 minutes before they walked in the door. They were still in the door 2 minutes after they left. It was just jolly shaking. But Tyron Smith?
Yeah.
That looked like a 340-pound wide receiver, the way he's built. You know, it's phenomenal, the talent that these guys have now. But what you mentioned, is the mental strength. With all of that physical talent, BJ, I don't see that they have the mental strength. And maybe it's just a change of the times with practice being so hard to get up. You know, you only have so many practices. You know, Jimmy would say to us, hey, we're going to practice hard because I don't want a thumbnail keeping you out of a game. Because if you don't practice and then you get that thumbnail in the game, we're over there dealing with a thumbnail when we should be working through it. Do you think that there's something to that? I see receivers now on 3rd and 8. For those of you who don't know, that means I'm going to come out of the game. I'm like, dude, it's 3rd and 8. This is a pass. You know you couldn't have gotten me off that field on 3rd and 8. If somebody came in and said, Coach said, get out. I said, get your ass out of this hole. You better get out of here. You know, what do you see when you call in games and you see people doing that? And these phenomenal athletes coming out of the game in those crucial situations and doing things like that on their mental strength.
I just think the business of the sport of football has become such a big part of it now that these guys are their own brand, with social media and what they're able to do and, you know, being able to generate revenue off of a brand, your individual person, your name, so much more than we ever did. You know, we relied on the group. We relied on the team. We relied on the franchise. Mm-hmm. You know, success breeds success. So if we were good, that was all going to be shared. And I remember Jimmy saying it, you know, early on.
Early, hey, I remember this.
Turned around, there's going to be enough credit to go around for everybody.
Right.
And that was those were wise words. You know, it really did happen. I mean, look, I had an opportunity to do radio and TV here in the Dallas area as a fullback. You know, so he couldn't have been spot on any more than he was that day. But my big thing is, you know, some of these decisions may not being made in the betterment of the team as much as the betterment of the individual. And you hope that that's not true. And I think, as you were saying, we kind of reminisce through the eras. I think one of the big things is there's a big difference between a guy who loves football and a guy who loves being a football player. And I just, you know, today's game with everything else that's going on is a part of that business. I think all these guys love being a football player, but do they truly love football? I see some of them answer questions about the history of the game and they don't really know it. You know, did you grow up as a fan watching it? Did you love the game? Did you always want to do this? Or do you want to do this because of the notoriety and the financial rewards that come along with it? You know, that to me seems to be maybe potentially something that's a little bit different with the players that we see today. And that's not to say that everybody's like that, because I know Drew Brees loves football. He loves being a football player, but he loves football. Peyton Manning loves football. You know, there's guys out there that love it, but our team, we had 53 guys that love football and, you know, were blessed and felt blessed to be a football player.
I always say that too, DJ. I say, you know, there's guys that love football and there are guys that love the lifestyle that being a football player brings, but when it comes to loving the game, it is different. And I tell all the time what Coach said. I said, Coach, I remember that meeting. Coach said, listen, we can all come for different reasons. We can all. Some people want to make money. Some people do. Some people that. Some people that want to be famous. Whatever. He said, whatever you want, that's fine. As long as we all understand winning takes care of all of it for everybody. You know what I'm saying? Winning takes care of all of it. And I wish these guys could understand that, DJ. And when I talk about doing autopsy, I want to break this thing down a little bit. You were at the game. You saw it. I mean, for me, losing that game to Washington, I thought, and the way they lost the game, I was like, this is a new low.
Yeah.
This is a new low. I don't think I've seen the Cowboys this bad since we retired. And I know they haven't been in an NFC championship game. And everybody talks about that all the time. 25 and 30 years of this, and I haven't done doing that since 1995. I understand all of that. But they still have not been this low. You know what I mean? They still have been pretty competitive, and I don't see them being competitive right now.
No. What we saw Sunday was really difficult. The bad thing is I had a little bit of a feel going into it. We'd had Washington in the opener. We had them against the Rams. I'd had Dallas twice. It just seemed like Washington was trending up, and Dallas, if anything, was trending down at that time. So, you know, the odd thing was, you know, one of the things that we rolled out there and during the course of the game was, you know, the way that guys have run on the Dallas defense. And you know, Washington came in as the 32-ranked rushing offense in the league.
Right.
And, you know, Antonio Gibson goes over 100 yards rushing for the first time in, you know, in his career. I mean, he's a rookie and he's transitioning from wide receiver to running back. And, you know, he goes for over 100 yards. And we were able to bring up guys that had their best day as a running back this season against the Dallas defense. And you know how that is, Mike. Man, if you can run the ball, I mean, if you can't stop the run, you know, we talk about it all the time. This is a passing league, but the inability to stop the run is one of the more demoralizing things the defense can ever have happen to them. And to give up 307 to Cleveland, 261 to Arizona, and maybe the worst one is to have the last ranked rushing team in the NFL come in and perform the way they did against Dallas's defense. So, you know, we can talk about the injuries in the offensive line and not having Dak in the lineup anymore. And the one thing we've said about Dallas this whole season is they can't play complementary football. One side can't lift up the other. One can't rise up when the other one is down. And unfortunately for that defense, they're going to have to do it the rest of the year. You know, it's got to be them. You know, they're the driving force. And to not be able to slow down, you know, the last ranked rushing attack in the NFL and to play as poorly as they did against the run, you're never going to be able to stop anybody because now the play action starts opening up. You know, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for them to have success.
You know, and I heard, who did I hear say this? And I thought it was just fascinatingly brilliant. 49ers head coach, Bill Walsh. He said, you're playing against a defense, right? You give up a 4-yard pass on first down, defense is jumping around. That was a success. We stopped with 4-yard pass on first down. That was a success. You give up a 4-yard run on first down, defense says that, well, we failed. That's, you see what I'm saying? It's the same amount. But to your point, that's the truth. I thought, I said, wow. I said, you know what? That's true. You give up a 4-yard run because if you get 4 yards every run, you don't ever have to do anything but hand the ball off, which minimizes the mistakes that you'll make. And the defense is being demoralized like you talked about. And this is basically a game that's basically over if you're giving up 4 yards on a run. You talk about that defense, man. Let's break the defense down. Let's do this autopsy. When you see that secondary, your thoughts are, is it enough talent? You say they have talent on the team. Is it enough talent? And where are the issues in that secondary?
Well, I think the big one is obviously safety position is something that the organization, that the fan base has talked about for years now. You know, we need a safety, you know, whether it was Earl Thomas or it was Jamal Adams, you know, they've been trying to get the name. They've been trying to get the up and coming player. I've always felt that they were okay on the back end. They weren't great. They didn't have that guy, but that's one of those positions that used to be like what the center position was on the offensive side of the ball. You know, we can find a center anywhere in the draft. We can develop him and make him into a good player. You know, we can find a safety anywhere in the draft. You know, if you're not going to go high, if you're not going to go in the first round, then there's really no sense to go, you know, anywhere until, you know, 5, 6, 7, wherever you want, because that guy is going to be the same. We're going to bring him in. We're going to develop him. And I think that Dallas has had that developmental guy the whole time. And some of them have reached the opportunity to play well, and some of them have struggled a little bit. But I think the last time they drafted a guy high was Darren Woodson. Or Roy Williams. I mean, you had a couple there where you went high with the safety position, and they were both great players for the franchise throughout their careers, but they haven't addressed it. So I think number one, you've got to make a conscious effort to kind of shore up your back end because it is critical. If it's a passing league, if it's becoming a passing league, and the safety position is the last line of defense, you've got to look at it from a different lens now. You know, this is not, you know, what it used to be as a safety, a guy dropping down in the box to stop the run. This is a guy that's your last line of defense on explosive plays that are one of the big stats that flips games. So, you know, I think they got to look there. I think Trayvon Diggs has got a bright future. I really do. I know people were hard on him on the play against Terry McLaurin. I don't know what he was doing. You know, his eyes were in the wrong spot and he got stuck with his feet in the ground and Terry just ran right past him.
But I saw that 2 weeks in a row, DJ. I don't forget. Yeah. It was safety. They got stuck in the ground with Christian Kirk running right by him. And I'm like, that's what I was like, wait a minute now. I know these guys are talking about scheme. That's not scheme. That's technique. That's a technique thing right there. So you got to worry about the technique before I can really complain about the scheme.
Exactly. So we're not dialed in yet. And that's the biggest thing. And this is a detail-oriented game. And if you're not on your details, that's what happens. But I've watched Trayvon throughout the season, and he's been right there a number of times. You know, there's just been some good throw and catches on him. I think he'll grow from that. I think he does have the mentality to be a tough corner. one of those guys that, you know, never remembers the last play. Anthony Brown is a guy that a lot of people have liked for a long time. You know, what's he going to do with this opportunity? Jordan Lewis is another name that's been bounced around. You know, what is he going to do with an opportunity? This is your chance right now. You know, let's step up and start playing. But the biggest thing for me when you talk about the back end is it's always rush. It's the combination of the rush and the coverage. These quarterbacks have too much time to throw the ball. You know, they're really putting, you know, the back end in a tough spot. So it's hard to run with these guys that long. So they're just out of sync. We touched on the guys up front. I think that's the one area where the evaluation, you know, was looking at what these guys have done and may be able to do as opposed to what you really thought they can do right now. And there's just not a lot. There's no pressure in the middle. Zero. If Alden Smith and Randy Gregory or DeMarcus Lawrence, if we're collapsing that pocket from the outside, they're just climbing right up the middle of the pocket. And that's the one thing you've got to stop. I mean, you know, everybody knows that if you're going to stop Drew Brees, you got to get in his face. You got to come through the middle. It's not so much around the edges. You know, you've got to get Drew up the middle. You know, Tom Brady is not very mobile. If you can get him coming up the middle, it's the most dangerous spot. We focus on those edge rushers, but those edge rushers that generate a lot of sacks usually have some really, really good inside players alongside of them. And I think that's the area that Dallas is struggling in the most. And I think that's having a big ripple effect all the way down through the defense.
Okay. And you talked about defensive line, so we don't have to go over that. But last thing on the secondary, why not go get Earl? Why not kick the tires on him right now? What's stopping you is he going to tear up your locker room? Is the locker room's already torn up and going through? Why not go and see, hey, Earl wanted to play here. Why won't they make that move?
You know that everybody's got contacts and connections. You know those phone calls have been made. You know, whether it's players calling teammates or friends in Baltimore, hey, what's he like? And hey, you don't even want to touch him. Let me tell you, you don't want to touch him. Coaches that have connections, hey, was it really that bad? Did you really feel like you needed to move away from him? Can he be that distractive in the locker room, that disruptive in the locker room? They've all done their homework. They've done their due diligence. And to me, it says, you know, some things about Earl that he needs to get sorted out in his life. Because when he was in his prime, he was amazing. I mean, he's the reason that defense did what it could do. I mean, the range that he had from the center of the field was unbelievable. You know, again, we talked about that. You're not going to be able to do that at this stage of your career. But he was such an elite player at that time. The drop off is going to be, you know, down to where normal guys are playing that position. But you know how important our locker room was. You know, that's the one thing you have to have. You know, you can't have anything go wrong there.
Yeah, but we had a championship locker room. They have a worse team in the NFL locker room. I don't care what kind of problems you bring in it. I see it. It can't be any worse than the problems I'm dealing with right now. I would be afraid if the Cowboys lined up this week against the Jets. I would, because I'm saying that they are the worst team in the NFL. I just don't want them to prove me right by lining up and letting the Jets beat them. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then Rich Eisen, I have it over my head all the time that his Jets beat the Cowboys, because I kill the Jets every week because they're a team.
They're the Jets.
They're the Jets. And that's just that. I'm worried that the Cowboys are going to become the Jets. And that's what scares me the most right there. So I'm telling you, I don't know. My whole thing with Earl, too, one last thing on Earl. I know he can't do what he does physically because we talked about it. But can you give somebody something mentally? Calvin Martin around, I wish I could tell people how important Calvin Martin was for my career. There were certain things, DJ, that I first got in the league, and I'm trying to go around the guy. Like I watched Kmart do, and Everson Walls back and came right back and jammed me to the ground. And I was like, oh my God, I've never gotten jammed to the ground. And Kmart said to me, he said, man, Michael, he said, play your strengths. He said, you can't don't do what I did. Play your strengths. He said, why are you doing all of that? He said, run through them. You're a big dude. I figured, man, if I had your size, I'd run right through the air. I said, okay, little fella, let me try that. You know what I mean? But that knowledge is what I was hoping Earl could come and give some of those young guys, how to read quarterbacks, how to see things. You talk about that range. The only way you have that kind of range is because you have tips that you've read so you can get a jump on the ball. So teach them how to have those tips. So you can use that old knowledge. And I mean, hopefully that's what they were trying to do with D-line. Get some older guys that have some knowledge to give to some of these younger guys, and take off. But it just hasn't happened just yet. And speaking of old guys, giving some young guys, Sean Lee, Leighton Van Der Esch, that linebacker group. What's your thoughts on that linebacker group? Jalen Smith and all those guys.
Athletic. Both coming off of, career-threatening injuries. So it takes a while to get back. As a guy who had a neck and tried to come back from a neck, it's in the back of your mind. You can tell everybody, I don't think about it. Oh, it's there. It's there. You're always wondering about it. So it's going to take them a while, just to get their confidence back. I think Jalen's probably closer. You see the athleticism of him. He just got to be a little bit more detailed. He's one of the guys that needs to step up. He's one of the guys that people on that defense are going to look to, and he's got to make plays. He can't let Logan Thomas break a tackle and run into the end zone on him. Right. You've got to be the guy that people are looking towards to make those big plays. And that's one of the big things right now with Dallas. Their star players aren't making their big plays. They were early on when Dak was there. He was giving all the receivers an opportunity to, but they've got to have some of their guys that you count on to make these plays, step up and make these plays, and they're just not doing that. And Jalen would be one of those guys. Leighton's got to be one of those guys. It'll be interesting to see what happens when Sean gets back on the field. But again, this comes down to the D-line. When Sean was in his prime, and Leighton are guys that fly sideline to sideline. And if they've got, offensive linemen coming up and being able to get them cut off because the D-line's not doing a good job of occupying those guys and forcing them, to be able to run clear, they're going to be challenged to make some plays.
Now, there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room. Collaborate live, drawing, sharing, and building ideas with everyone on the same page. And make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams.
So I have to ask, because I know there are people talking about it. If you're talking about a scheme that's not fitting the talent, and obviously that something's going on defense, how long do you think they stay? Or do you think Coach Nolan or any of those guys are in jeopardy of any changes being made with the defensive coaching staff?
Yeah, you can't be too stubborn with it, right? It's always the players. It's not the scheme. It's the players within the scheme. And if they're not comfortable, if they don't believe in it, then it's hard. Now, everything I read, and everything I hear coming out of the locker room, they're upbeat about it. And they say they practice well. It's just not transferring. The turnovers kind of change the complexion of the game week in and week out. You kind of have to get away from what you were doing. We're not on the inside, so we really can never know. But I do think that this is, when you talk about going from one defense to another, I don't think you could have gone any farther than to go from the Tampa 2 Rod Marinelli style down to the Mike Nolan multi-front 3-4, kind of at its core, because you're looking for different guys. You're looking for different body types. Yeah. I think it is. It's one of those ones that you wanted to transition out of gradually. And I think, maybe they tried to transition out of everything too quickly. When Chan Gailey came and tried to turn us into the Pittsburgh Steeler offense, it's like, wait a minute, we got one of the best dropback quarterbacks that's ever played the game. We're not trying to get to third and four. We're trying to score on every play. You've got to change your mindset. You got to change your mentality and work with the talent that we have here. Because we don't fit into what you were doing with Cordell Stewart in Pittsburgh. It's a square peg in a round hole. And we've lived that. We went through that. And you know how frustrating that is when you've got a scheme that doesn't really fit your style one way or the other. And then when you lose faith in that, when you lose the belief that you can be successful, running that system.
Well, you brought that home right there perfectly. I'm telling you, man, that Chan Gailey system, I didn't want any parts of it. I'm like, wait a minute. Hey, what we were doing working just fine. We won 3 Super Bowls doing it. And it was a total different. And I told Jerry, I said, Jerry, what you're doing now, you're trying to deal with too many variables. After I had retired, after I was gone, I said, man, you had a system and you had recruited players that fit that system. It was a timing system. And now you went outside and got in a whole new system. Now you got to go find a whole new group of players to fit this system. And, of course, it just didn't work out with Chan Gailey, so they went and got somebody to come back and work the system that we had been working, and Coach Garrett, and they're still working that system right now today, which I find fascinating. DJ, in all your years, the 21 years you talked about earlier of doing what we're doing and doing the broadcasting business, have you ever seen a team hit this hard by injuries? And I'm not giving the Cowboys any excuse here in this autopsy, but I just on the offensive side, when you talk about the offensive line and Dak, have you ever seen a team hit this hard in such key positions in a season?
No. Maybe there's a couple times the Giants and the Falcons got hit in the offensive line pretty hard. And when one position gets hit hard with your depth, you're really going to struggle. But when it's the offensive line or a defensive line, one of those key areas, and not just that, but a Travis Frederick, a Tyron Smith, a Lyle Collins, and then, you know, Zach Martin's been in and out of the lineup. Those aren't just offensive linemen. Those are all pro offensive linemen. So no, I have not. And we all say, hey, injuries are a part of the game. Yes, they are. They are a part of the game and everybody deals with them. Are they an excuse? No, they're not an excuse, but they can be a reason as to why. And there's a big difference in a reason as to why and an excuse. If you use it as an excuse, you know, that's just somebody who's, oh, poor us. You know, look what happened to us. But you go through the season and you grind and you fight through it and you do everything you can. And at the end of the year, it's a reason why. Why were you guys so bad last year? They had such high expectations for you guys. Well, did you look at our offensive line? You know, we lost like all of our all-pro guys within the first 3 weeks of the season. Did you see we lost our starting quarterback? You know, we were averaging 36 points a game, and then he got hurt, and now we're averaging 6 points a game. There's reasons why. Are they excuses? No, because that's the nature of the beast in this business. But that's why I think sometimes organizations make a knee-jerk reaction. They don't step back and really look at what happened that year. And exactly what you said, when you have a system that's in place and you're looking for a certain type of player to fit into that system, you make a change when really there was a reason why that season wasn't successful. And if you'd have just waited and come through the next year, now you're unwinding. Now you hired somebody that's going to come in and he's going to unwind that whole thing. You got to transition your roster. I remember when we were at Syracuse University, we were sitting there we were started out 0-4, and you know, there was some chatter with the alumni groups and all the different people there with football operations and stuff. And they wanted to get rid of Coach Mack. And our AD at the time said, listen, we don't do that. We honor our contract. So Coach McPherson is going to have the opportunity to finish the year and we'll evaluate at the end of the season. So I want all of you to stop all this conversation about making a coaching change in the middle of the season. It's no good for recruiting and it's no good for the reputation of our university. You know, Jake Krauthammer was unbelievable. And we went and finished, 5-2 down the stretch, and we ended up 5-6. So they don't make the coaching change. Next year, we go undefeated and finish fourth in the country. So if you got a bunch of people on the outside that aren't really looking at it hard, and we had a ton of starters knocked out in the first 2 weeks of the season. I mean, key guys. So if you would have taken a step back at the end of the year, there were reasons why. Were they excuses? No, they're just reasons why. And then you make your decision at the end of the year based on all that.
And you know, I guarantee you, every Cowboy fan hopes and prays that God heard exactly what you said and that this thing could turn around just like you guys turned around for Syracuse. Dale, I only got a few more minutes with you, and I want to kind of go around the NFL a little bit. I know we talked a lot about the Cowboys because I wanted to do that autopsy, but I certainly want to get your opinions on some things that are going around the NFL. I want to start first with Antonio Brown going to Tampa. Your thoughts on that happening and does this make them the favorite now to win the Super Bowl, to play the first team to play in a Super Bowl in their home stadium?
Kind of looks like what Washington was doing years ago, right? They're just, you know, grabbing as many stars as you possibly can and putting them all together. That does not make a great team. A bunch of big high profile names that are great players individually does not make a great team. So, you know, Bruce Arians needs to be careful right now. There's a lot of big egos on that team. Do you have the glue guys there? I think he's
about to ask you, is Tom Brady that glue guy?
Levante David is that glue guy. If he feels that locker room is strong enough, and that's one of the things that was able to be done in Dallas when we would go out and get a Charles Haley, is the locker room was going to take care of that. And is that Tampa locker room strong enough to take care of an Antonio Brown coming in? And it's kind of funny to me because we did this in New England, right? It came in and it didn't seem to mesh all that great. So if it didn't work there, why is it going to work here? So I think there's some interesting things that I would like to learn about as this thing moves forward. But Tampa Bay, holy smokes, there's enough talent there already. Wide receiver was the one position you really didn't have to fool around with. Man, that team is stacked. So I think this is going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because to me, I'm getting ready for the Green Bay game this week. I watched Green Bay Tampa Bay on film. You know, you saw that score 38-10, and you expected some great plays on the outside and a lot of points. Tampa Bay beat them up on the inside. They beat them up in the offensive and defensive line. So Tampa Bay is legit, and that defense was flying around. I've never seen Aaron Rodgers that flustered. They've got something really good there right now, and hopefully this is not one of those situations where you're trying to get better. And all of a sudden something comes in and disrupts what you have right now.
I hope, to this day, I love Troy. And no matter what, even when we're at dinner or whatever, I still capitulate to him in that sense, because he's my quarterback. That's what I know. You know what I mean? I hope and I pray that's what, in some sense, Antonio Brown gets for Tom and says, you know what? This guy stuck with me. Like when I went to court, Troy showed up. I told him, like, man, I don't want to put you in this, man. Don't come. But he showed up anyway. I started talking about, I'll get emotional because that's what he means to me, but he showed up anyway. And there's nothing you can ever get me to do or say against Troy. And I'm hoping and praying that AB has that some kind of way for Tom. And he says, especially now, I know it didn't work out in New England, but especially now, since you're reaching down, trying to pull me back up, I will never, ever do anything to embarrass you or bring bad light on this action. So I'm hoping it works out for him in that way, because I always want the story to end well, so I can later on tell others about his journey, as we talked about and talking about your journey. A couple more things before I let you go. Cam Newton being benched. Are we seeing the end of Cam Newton's career? If Bill Belichick can't revive and can't resuscitate, is it a flatline situation? What do you see with that situation?
We had him a little bit last year in Carolina at the beginning of the year, and the arm is what I think is going to be the detriment. And there was a point where you didn't have to worry about anything beyond 18 yards, so you could kind of squeeze your coverage down. You were always worried about him running the football, I think Father Time is his calling the shots on this one again. Sometimes the game of football retires you. And I'll always go back to the beginning of Cam's career. As big as he is and as physical as he is, when you come to the NFL, there are dudes up here in this league that you just don't mess around with. That guy doesn't exist in college. The guy you talked about, the 6'5", 315-pound guy that can run you down in a 10-yard spot because he is that big and that fast and that explosive. And you don't need to take that guy on. And I think that there was a little bit of that in the beginning of Cam's career that maybe just over time really started to kind of pile up on him a little bit, as opposed to watching the way that Kyler plays and the way that Russell plays. If Cam would have done that, maybe he stretches that career a little bit longer.
And the last question, Kyler Murray and the dude you just mentioned, Russell Wilson, Kyler beating Russell the other night. Is Arizona this good? Is Kyler Murray that great? What's your thoughts when you see him play?
Very unique. With his quickness, it's amazing. I think it surprises defenders. They don't realize how quick and explosive he is and how quickly he can get out of the pocket. Once he starts to really kind of settle in as a passer, he's making progress. They've got good skill players around him. You know, that's another group that, you know, they've done a real nice job. And actually the offensive line coach, you know, is a buddy of mine, you know, Sean Kugler. And Sean it would have been a great NFL player. He did not got hurt in college, and he's done a heck of a job with that offensive line. As they get better, Kyler will get better. And I just think it's one of those situations where we know how important head coach quarterback relationship is in the NFL. And that one was already set as they were getting together in Arizona with Cliff and with Kyler. So I think it's going to be really fun to watch what they do. And to me, I love the NFC West now because it reminds us or reminds me of the NFC East when we played. I mean, that was the big boy league, you know, back then. And, you know, it's fun to watch the NFC West and to see Arizona now climb up and to be able to compete with San Francisco and Seattle and the Rams. You know, that division is going to be a lot of fun to watch down the stretch.
You mentioned it, but boy, if you ever say it again today, if you say it today, the NFC East used to be like the NFC West. They would almost take everything you got because the NFC East looks so bad right now. DJ, thanks for taking the time, man, and giving me the moment, man. And you did a great job with the game, so I appreciate it. I needed to talk to you to kind of do this autopsy, even though I hope somehow, some way, the Cowboys find some kind of success in this season that we are enduring right now. It's just a tough season all the way around, buddy.
I think, unfortunately, Mike, the best thing that they can look forward to is to be better at the end of the year than they are right now. They have not progressed from week one till now. They keep making the same mistakes. So to me, you know, it's a lost season right now. You know, when you talk about making a playoff run, I don't care how bad the East is. I just don't see them being competitive in it down the stretch. So for me, the biggest thing for them would be to resolve some of the issues that you're seeing right now, have a plan in place for 2021, and just make sure that nobody quits and make sure you're playing your best football at the end of the season.
Go find those players that you're going to mark your future with, because mm-hmm. this present is already done. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you taking the time.
So good catching up with you, Mike. Take care.
Wow, that was great. I want to thank Darryl Johnston for breaking that down, man. I know he was right there watching the game and truly, truly did a great job calling the game and helping us through this autopsy today. Now I want to get to the people that brought life, not death, to me on Sunday, and I call them my playmakers. Honorable mention is Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett, 15 receptions, 200 yards, and 3 touchdowns in that great overtime loss to the Arizona Cardinals. And I tell you why I put Tyler Lockett in here. All year, it's been all about DK Metcalf in Seattle, and you knew when you get into a big game, people are going to try to take away that big target. So you have to stay ready to show up and blow up and play well. And don't get caught up in, oh, they're throwing him all the ball. They're doing this. Tyler Lockett, you did your thing, buddy. You went out. And I'm talking about, did y'all see the plays he made? Those one-handed catch he made. Patrick Peterson, he was soaked over him like a wet t-shirt, and he still made those plays. This is the very nature of what I call a playmaker. I went up against Deion Sanders, Darryl Green, Neas Williams, all kinds, Rod Woodson's, all kinds of Hall of Famers. And people always say, Michael, they can cover you. I say, yes, they can, but I'm still going to catch the ball. That's why they call me a playmaker. Let me tell you who else catch the ball, even though you cover them. Devontae Adams, 13 receptions, 196 yards, 2 TDs. That's the most yards receiving by a Green Bay wide receiver since Shorty Nelson had 206 back in 2014 versus the Jets. That was so big because we know Devontae Adams is the main person, the main receiver for the Green Bay Packers. And no matter how much you know, as long as he has Aaron Rodgers back there, you still can't stop it. That's a bad man right there, and he deserves to be honorable mention along with Tyler Lockett and my playmakers. But my playmaker of the week goes to that quarterback, Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray, 360 yards passing, 3 TDs and only 1 interception. 14 times he rushed the football for 67 yards and a rush TD. He led his team to an overtime victory, 37-34
over Russell Wilson and the undefeated Seahawks. Russell Wilson paved the way for Kyler Murray to come in the league. They're both 5'10". People were saying there's no way you can play quarterback in this league. Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray look like twins on the football field. They really are so similar. I even play with them. I call them Mr. Miyagi and Danielson from The Karate Kid. And you always see Mr. Miyagi giving Danielson great lessons on how to be great at his craft, but also be great in life. What I watched on that Sunday night game, I watched Danielson beat Mr. Miyagi at his own game. Russell Wilson got Russell Wilson by Kyler Murray. That's what Russell does to everybody. He waits and he always comes down late and win the football game. But Kyler Murray said, not this time, buddy. I've been watching, I've been learning, and now I want to lead. Danielson, you want to take out Mr. Miyagi and say, I am the king. Kyler Murray, you keep this up, man. Maybe you can try to get to that MVP fight that Russell Wilson seemed to be leading, since you're trying to take everything that Russell Wilson has. Congratulations, Kyler Murray. You are my playmaker.
Thanks for downloading the MIP. Check out new episodes of the Michael Irvin Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Now, there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room. Collaborate live, building ideas on the same page, and see more of your team on screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.